This talk is about love without clinging. And in the past, when I've talked about love, and I've talked about it a lot, it's been within the context of the Dharma and our practice, but not so much about how it operates within our lives. For lay people, most of us love other people. One way or another, love takes many forms. But we do. We have our hearts open to other beings, our pets, in my case, my neighbor's pets. We're loving beings. And I think I'm about ready, after studying this subject for decades, to talk about it, not as a marriage counselor, not as a mediator or a conflict resolution agent, but as a Dharma teacher. How do we bring the Dharma and our practice to our relationships? And I want to start by saying that I am going to be talking about love as another word for acceptance. In my approach to the Dharma, the two things are the same. Acceptance is not clinging to our preferences, which, as you know, as you've been studying the Dharma, listening to various talks about it, clinging is the source of our suffering, our dukkha. So that's another thing that the word love is synonymous with, and that's freedom, because we're not clinging. Acceptance is necessary for the practice of mindfulness. And it's one of the elements. I mean, it's right in there. Part of what mindfulness is love. It's to be accepting of whatever arises in the moment and having this unguarded awareness. What comes up, how it affects us, how it passes away. Pema Chodron said, if your everyday practice is to open to all your emotions, all the people you meet, to all the situations you encounter, without closing down, trusting that you can do that, then that will take you as far as you can go. And then you'll understand all the teachings that anyone has ever taught. Many fundamental teachings of the Dharma point to love. Non-harming, which is the flip side of accepting, kindness. And it's the basis of ethics, Buddhist ethics. Whether it's in the Eightfold Path or Sila, the teachings of the five lay precepts, all based on this idea of kindness or non-harming. And this concept of anatta, or not self, which is very closely related to the fact that everything changes, means that not only are we all in this together, but we are all one. There is no separation. I don't get to have a self all my own. I can think I've got one, and I very often do. Of course, we pick people on the basis of wanting to be around them and preferring their company to others. And, you know, we do that on the basis of our preferences, which is a polite way of saying the things that we cling to. And this preference that we have for certain people, when we do spend time with them, it grows into affection, which is perfectly natural and a lovely experience. And it's different from metta, loving kindness. Affection is the near enemy of metta, because it has the dukkha of that preference, a weak form, but still clinging, that's mixed into it. Once we get a relationship rolling with someone, all sorts of preferences come in. The choices that we make of people and with people can have more or less wisdom or clinging in them. And wisdom is a word that can also be translated from the Pali as discernment. Knowing that this is this and that is that. Or another way of the Buddha put it was knowing the truth of what is. About being lay people, there is a monk who wrote that monastics are really good at loving universally. And that's part of metta. It's may all beings feel peaceful and happy, etc. But it's lay people who are better at loving strongly. And I believe he used the word passion, which itself has a connotation of suffering, the passion of the Christ. I really want to make it clear, though, as I go into this kind of murky water here, that pure love and acceptance can be there in our hearts, and we may have clinging mixed in with it. It doesn't negate that part of loving that is totally accepting. Now, again, what we're not accepting causes dukkha or mental suffering. And in relationships, whether they're friendships or intimate partnerships, that dukkha will manifest as, here's just a short list, desire or dislike. The desire is for more or less of the things or actions of the loved one. And I'll explain that a little more later. And the dislike is for things that come up in the relationship that we want to avoid or oppose to try to reduce them somehow. Of course, none of us have ever felt that, right? Coming out of desire and dislike is, I'll give you the list first. It's a short list. Not everything's included. Fear, anger, regret, grief, and then other things. And the fear will show up as caution, worry, anxiety. The anger is from a mild irritation to rage. And regret will come out as shame, self-blame, and loss of self-esteem. And it's awful to see a friend go through that. We really wish we could somehow relieve them of that burden. Grief is universal, and it's from loss of little things, like a tchotchke that, you know, you really, really cherished, or separation from a loved one, either by a breakup or by death. There's a way that these emotions and the clinging that led to them determine how we relate to the people we love. And I'm including love as an element of friendship. We can approach the relationship with an attitude of 1 through 5. One is, here's what I want you to do. I'll love you no matter what you do, but we will negotiate or fight or have a tug of war over our conflicting desires, and I will still love you. So 2 is, I don't want you to say or do X, Y, or Z. If you do, I will do something I know you won't like. If you won't even try, I'll leave you. 3, if you love me, you'll know what I want. But I'll love you whatever you do. And I'll try not to bother you with how unhappy I am. Oh my gosh. I've seen them all. 4, I'll love you as much as you love me. Or almost. Maybe more. If our love is too unequal, we'll move on to other people. And the one who loves the other more will be the loser. 5, I love you and enjoy your company. I see that our time is up, and I wish you well.
Adios, baby.
4, our discussion this evening, I'm going to see how you feel about breaking up into little groups. And one possible topic, whether it's in little groups or together, might be which of those approaches you think would be the most fun or funny, and which one you think is the healthiest or the closest to what you've experienced in your life. You know, it's interesting when we encounter someone who has possibly even the same X, Y's, and Z's as we have, but a whole different negotiating style. And that alone can be a conflict between us and those we love. And here's a little bit of good news. We can improve how we relate to our loved ones by recognizing our own dukkha-filled states of mind. Like, yeah, man, there's something bugging me. I wonder what it is. And include it in the meditation. Feel around it. See what it's about. If we don't, then we're stuck with obsessive thinking or troubled moods and or just acting out irrationally without knowing why, without being able to explain it to our friend or our partner. So how can we tell if our minds are ruled by clinging or the discernment of wisdom? Attachment or clinging captures our attention and shrinks our awareness. The mind coalesces around a story about me and mine. And there's a mental and physical, even if we don't feel it, tightness that feels yucky in varying degrees, depending on how powerful that clinging is. In contrast, wisdom feels spacious and relaxed, with no emotional stickiness to hold our attention. The mind is free to follow changing events and adapt and be okay with whatever situation we face. When we're mindful, the urge to react without thinking leaves us, and the burden of the ego is lifted. It's a much easier way to interact with the world. To cultivate wisdom, we must explore our dukkha and let go of its causes and conditions. And that means what history is under it, what in our past has created this mental habit. And so this is where we start to look a lot like psychotherapy. And when I'm teaching people, you know, in some course or other, I get to know them very well and usually love them dearly. The body tells us when we're clinging. And it can be a really good early warning if we're in tune with it. And as Friedman, who wrote much of the online meditation course that I'm now teaching again, says, by meeting the mind states with attention that is free of judgment or commentary, we are in effect stepping outside of these mind states. Once more with feeling. By meeting those mind states with attention that's free of judgment or commentary, we are actually stepping outside of the mind states. So it's freeing. We can think and perceive without that tightened, shrunken attention and see how that mind state works. And start to, as I said before, feel our way around it. And very often in this process, we will have an insight into its provenance. Where did it come from? Doing this unplugs its power over us, certainly in the moment. It's like that description of the Buddha on the night of his enlightenment, when he was visited by the personification of the hindrances called Mara. Mara tormented the soon-to-be Buddha, who instantly ended those torments simply by saying, "I see you, Mara," stepping outside of the mind state and examining them. So here's an apparent conundrum. We need acceptance for mindfulness, and we need mindfulness for letting go or acceptance. It sounds like a catch-22, but it isn't. If we are in the habit of meditating and have learned by letting go of whatever thought has taken us away from the breath, and thus accessing mindfulness for however long, maybe a moment. And in that process, we have let go of whatever distractions, whatever stickiness those thoughts had for us. So we're loosening that clinging. It's probably come again in some other form, but we're making progress incrementally. And as we continue to study that particular root of that particular clinging, we are getting closer and closer to what the Buddha repeatedly called uprooting it, going kind of reaching back into our history and pulling it all out. And I know a lot of practitioners who say, oh, I used to do whatever. They don't do it anymore. And it's wonderful to keep track of that and look back at how it used to be. This is our progress, and let that fuel our continued practice. So letting go is cultivating non-clinging. Each time the clinging lets go, that's a liberation. That's a moment of freedom. Now, there are times when our minds get kind of settled. You know, this happens in relationships all the time. There's this sort of stasis. It feels so good at first. It's like a snow globe, you know, with all of the white stuff down at the bottom. And then there's some conflict or a crisis or a loss, and the snow globe gets shaken up. So relationships are just a wonderful place full of opportunities to practice, because it shakes up our snow globe. And even when relationships end, friends move away, we just can't handle our partner anymore, there's some grief, or a partner dies, there's grief, which is a deep letting go. It's a process of accepting the suffering of it. Yeah, this hurts. Hurt yesterday, and it's going to hurt tomorrow for however long. And sometimes it hurts the rest of our lives. But there's a certain point at which we can handle it, when the suffering is all been accepted. So don't underestimate the value of dealing with our relationships mindfully. When I was in training with the Zen Hospice Center, Frank Ostaseski, who I asked, how am I going to deal with the fact that I'm getting very, very close to this one fellow with AIDS who was dying? And Frank asked, what do you come here for, except to get your heart broken over and over? Because a broken heart is an open heart. So this practice, whether we're dealing with just annoyance from a friend or a lover, or we're dealing with a separation, by being mindful, by practicing with, okay, how are we approaching this? What do we really want or not want? How do we communicate that to our friend or our partner? And being mindful of all of those choices that we're making and why, it can lead to liberation. this time, or incrementally, or until we're free of that character trait, or we're free from all clinging. For mindful people in this snow globe of life, everything is magical. If we study what's going on in this moment, it's potentially liberating. Thank you.
Thank you.